WNYC and Money Talking are supported by the Cy Sims Foundation since 1985, dedicated to a better life through advancements in education, scientific research, and the arts, and the Cy Sims School of Business and Executive MBA program at Yeshiva University.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning, I'm Charlie Herman. And this week, we heard a lot of regrets and apologies.
You deserve better. I apologize. I'm accountable to you for fixing these problems.
I want to apologize to you that the website has not worked as well as it should.
We offer our deepest sympathies to both of them. Barney's New York has zero tolerance for any form of discrimination.
That was Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius and Medicare's Chief Marilyn Tavener about the failings of healthcare.gov, as well as the CEO of Barney's commenting on the allegations of racial profiling at the upscale department store. And joining me, and I'm never sorry to have them here at all, are WNYC contributors Joan O'Sara with The New York Times and Rana Fruhar with Time Magazine. And just how important is it to hear a government official or a CEO admit that they make a mistake and to say, I'm sorry?
Well, a lot of it depends on whether the customer or people in general are willing to give the particular company the benefit of the doubt. At the moment, nobody, especially Republicans, are not going to give the benefit of the doubt to anybody on the healthcare site. On the flip side, though, if your Apple computer, the beloved, and the CEO comes out and said, we made a terrible mistake with our new map application and we're really sorry, it tends to get shrugged off and, oh, it's okay.
You know, I think it also depends on who's doing the apologizing and whether or not the organization, be it a government or a company in question, is going to change. So, you know, when it comes to Obamacare, sure, Kathleen Sebelius had a lot of responsibility for this, but she really wasn't consulted all that much during the passage through Congress. You know, there were a lot of issues with that. She's taking the fall for it now. It's good. We should be having some apology, but there are probably a lot more officials that should be apologizing for that, too, including possibly the president.
Well, let's take a listen to another CEO apology, one that didn't go so well.
We're sorry for the massive disruption it's caused to their lives. And, you know, there's no one who wants this thing over more than I do. You know, I'd like my life back.
Oh, dear.
Well, that was BP's former, and I stress, former CEO Tony Hayward referring to the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. He is somebody who took a concrete step and resigned. So in that case, an apology wasn't enough. Where do you find that balance?
Well, first of all, it was a terrible apology. That's number one. Number two, BP is
actually...
So
if he'd done a better apology, maybe he could have kept his job?
It's a little unlikely after that, but it certainly hastened it because it was such an egregiously idiotic thing to say. But then the second part of it is, in terms of apologizing, BP has spent literally tens of billions of dollars to people who are victims of the spill, for the ecology of the area, and it doesn't do any good. Because BP is considered the bad guy. They're always going to be considered the bad guy. And there's nothing they can do to change that.
You know, it's really interesting, too, because it goes to whether or not apologies are kind of a form of kabuki or whether they actually reflect real responsibility for real problems. So with BP, for example, I mean, you know, yes, Tony Hayward definitely bungled that apology. But the problems that led up to not just this disaster, but any number of others in BP's history weren't necessarily his fault. You know, I mean, the company had a culture of risk. Lord Brown didn't apologize for that.
Well, is that something that we see now, that people make apologies, but they're really non-apology apologies? I mean, do we see that in the financial sector in the last couple of years?
Oh, my gosh. I think so. I mean, you know, I'm just remembering Bob Diamond, who was the former head of Barclays, who a couple of years ago said that it was time for bankers to stop apologizing. And then he had to apologize 2 years later because his bank was being implicated in yet another scandal.
Well, just this week, we had the CEO of a bank called Rabobank, which is fined $1 billion for a role in the LIBOR scandal, see its CEO resign. He didn't actually say, I made a mistake. He said, I was horrified to see the emails that came out, but he still resigned.
Well, how dangerous financially is it for a company when they make these words of contrition?
Well, it's actually kind of dangerous, and that's why so many of these apologies are danced around. Take the example of Merck and Pfizer. Merck pulled Vioxx from the shelves, said they were sorry, and they wound up having to pay $4 billion by the time all the lawsuits were settled. Pfizer had a very similar product. It did not apologize. It hung tough. And as a result, they pretty much got off the hook.
Well, so, Rana, then, is there a difference between saying I'm sorry and actually accepting responsibility? Because I get the sense that even if Jamie Dimon says I'm sorry about what happened with this trade where we lost billions of dollars, that doesn't necessarily mean that we aren't going to fight tooth and nail any lawsuit.
That's right. And, you know, and again, it goes to who's doing the apologizing and has anything really changed? So when it comes to, say, apologizing for the London Whale incident, okay, well, fair enough, but the laws that actually facilitated the trade haven't changed. The bank is still lobbying along with many others to roll back Dodd-Frank provisions. So, you know, what does an apology really mean?
Every time you call J.P. Morgan these days, all they say is, we're sorry. We're sorry, we're sorry, we're sorry. We did wrong. We're going to do better, you know, please.
Yeah, but for what?
Right. But the one thing that would have shown some humility would have been to do what a lot of shareholders wanted them to do and separate the CEO job from the chairman of the board job, which Jamie Dimon has both. And he fought tooth and nail to prevent that from happening.
That's right. You know, and I got to say, I think that Americans in general could take a page out of the British book. I mean, British officials, both in business and in politics, tend to just resign, and then you don't hear from them. You don't hear 15 apologies. They just go. And we could probably do a bit more of that.
Which would you prefer, that a CEO or a government official says, I'm sorry, or that they actually just fix the problem and just sort of charge forward or resign? I mean, what's the best outcome?
Well, fixing the problem. But then that goes to the point that we often want just one person to take blame. We want to put a face to an issue. And I think that the banking crisis is a great example of the fact that there's not one face to put to something. There's not one person to blame. The banks are to blame. Congress is to blame for not properly re-regulating the system. Lobbyists are to blame. So, you know, it's all well and good to find the banks, to want J.P. Morgan or Jamie Dimon in particular to say sorry over and over again, but it doesn't actually change anything.
Well, let's look ahead to some of the other stories we're watching next week. Joe, what's on your radar?
Well, I'm watching the FAA, which is allowing electronic devices to be open, thank you very much, when the plane takes off and when the plane lands. So my next question is, when are they going to allow the flight attendants to stop telling you how to put your seatbelt on?
Ronna, what are you watching?
So I'm looking at housing. The September numbers are in, and they're not good. You know, housing had been a real bright spot in the economy overall for the last few months. As a matter of fact, it was one of the main things pushing growth forward. But the September numbers are bad. The October numbers are probably going to be bad because of the government shutdown. So if this continues, we may see house prices, which had been up over the last year, start to go back down.
Well, we'll be watching those stories and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org/business. You can take this program with you as a podcast, available on iTunes. Ronna Fruhar with Time Magazine, Joe Nocera with The New York Times. Thanks for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Charlie Herman. This is Money Talking from WNYC.